Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday afternoon. Our question this hour is, what if schools hired dogs as therapists, or dogs hired schools as a place to have employment? A school in San Diego is using a facility dog to offer children a kind of healing that humans sometimes cannot provide. And the school provides another kind of healing as well. We have two guests with us to examine what it is that animals can do for children, particularly who are in distress, who may have issues going on at home that are bad, really, really bad. They may provide a kind of friendship. If students are being bullied and don't have other friends, you can always talk to a dog. We have two guests with us this hour who are doing really extraordinary work, and we'll be welcoming phone calls from you as well. Mary Skrabuka is the coordinator of family social services at the O'Farrell Charter School in San Diego, and she has a dog with her, Sierra, and Sierra is quite a hit in the school. She's a golden retriever, and she's on the campus and serves as kind of a therapist, really, a dog therapist to help children center themselves and learn. Obviously, dogs can't do everything, and this family social services also provides all kinds of counseling. Some of the students have parents who are incarcerated. They don't have enough food to eat. They have lots of other issues, and so the social services department handles that. But the dog has quite a presence on the school grounds. And Mary, we thank you very much for being with us. It was a great article about you and Sierra, and thank you for being on the show.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me. This is something that's near and dear to my heart, so I'm glad we're able to share our experiences, and hopefully more people will be able to do the same thing.
Yes, absolutely. I share your love of this as well. Dr. Brenda Jagatheson is also with us. She has some very interesting stories about using squirrels, actually, a squirrel and a dog for therapy work in other places in the country. And she saw this bond a long time ago and wanted to do a thesis on it. And her advisor said, "Dad, this is hooey. This doesn't mean anything. And look what's happened since, how much we've learned about the human-animal bond." She's associate professor in learning sciences and human development and early childhood and family studies in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Washington. And she is Vice President of Development for the International Association of Human-Animal Interaction Organizations. Dr. Brenda Jagatheson, thank you so much for being with us. You were ahead of your time on finding out about this bond, weren't you, many years ago?
Yes, thank you very much for having me on the show. Yes, indeed, I realized the phenomena or the magic of animals to be able to help human beings way long back in the 90s. So, yes, I was ahead of time at that time.
Yeah, and you probably learned it from your own experience with, of all things, a squirrel.
Yes, that was a childhood experience that I had gone through myself, having a squirrel by accident that fell out of the nest in India. And it helped me during my time. So when I was being bullied in school, little did I know that something in such a small form could bring me the greatest comfort of all times at that time.
And lead to a profession, actually, right?
Yes, led to my profession. Actually, it was Kush, my dog, that really confirmed my true beliefs about the power of the human-animal bond.
Mm-hmm.
That led me to realize that there's something that is out there that is completely unexplainable in mm-hmm. many ways. And yet, at the same time, we have failed to recognize the power in such a relationship.
Right. Well, we'll understand it better at the end of this hour. Mary, I'm sure you see that every day, the relationship between Sierra and the young children who are experiencing so much trouble in their lives. They sometimes can just whisper in Sierra's ear.
They do. And there's often students will come into the counseling center and I'll say, "Who are you here to see?" And the first thing they say is they want to see Sahara. They don't want to see any of the staff. They want to see the dog. And that's fine. They'll go over into the counseling rooms and they'll sit with her on the floor. Sometimes they play fetch with her. And it's usually within 5 or 10 minutes and they say, "Miss Mary, I feel so much better. Can I go back to class now?"
Hmm.
So it works. It really does. She's got that special touch that sometimes humans don't have.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about your using your dog, Kush, in, I believe, were you in Singapore at that time? Were you working in Singapore?
Yes.
With, I know you've written eloquently about this, with a young boy who really was not very verbal at all.
Right. I'm of Indian ancestry. I'm Indian, as in East Indian, but born and raised in Singapore. So I was actually working at the Japanese school over there, and a third grade student was demoted to my class on grounds that he was suspected of having ADHD. He was mute. He was not participating in the class, and all sort of troubles that were listed in his chart sheet as the reason to be demoted. It turns out, to cut a long story short, is that it turns out that he was extremely bullied in school for being part Chinese, part Japanese. And I soon learned that in the Japanese culture, when you're of mixed race, you're not considered pure. And so you tend to be isolated quite a bit. And full-blooded Japanese kids do not want to play with you. And that's what happened to Tomo.
Mm.
He happened to form a friendship with my dog at home when he started to come to my home for extra help in his reading and writing. And it was through this friendship with Kush that I finally learned how terribly bullied he was in school. After months of being mute, even in my classroom and with me, and after forming a relationship with Kush, something happened at that time when he started to disclose all the things that was going wrong in his life at school. And I found that he spoke about the most harshest things that happened to him when he was caressing or petting Kush, or Kush was lying at his feet, or just licking his face. And that's the time when some of the most difficult things that he has experienced would come out of his mouth, and he would tell me, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I sought counseling for him in our school, because until then, even the head schoolmaster had no idea what was happening to this little 9-year-old boy.
Hmm. And you mentioned the counseling in the school. Let's talk a little bit about that. Bringing a dog to school isn't going to miraculously completely help children who are suffering from trauma or from incredibly difficult home situations or from bullying. But there is a need also, and you certainly do that at your school. There is a need for counseling. Sometimes there's a need for food. Sometimes there's a need for other kinds of services. Isn't that right, Mary?
Yes. We have a full-service social service center right on our campus. So regardless of what the families walk in, if they need counseling, if they need support groups, if they need clothing, if they need household items, we make sure that there's a central place where they can come and let us know where their needs are. And then we can hook them up with the right resources to make sure that they can get as much as they need of the resources and get more stable. But Sahara seems to cushion all that. When they come in, even when the parents come in and they're distraught and they need something, they seem to calm down a little bit and pet her, and they'll talk about what's going on and the troubles that they're having, and they're petting her at the same time, and it has a calming effect even on the parents when they come in. So it's worked in the whole picture, as opposed to just working with the kids. It seems to work with everybody.
Mm. And tell me more about Sahara. What kind of job, what kind of dog she is, and how much training she's had?
She was brought into an organization called Positive Teams in San Diego when she was 8 weeks old. She was raised by her trainer, Marcy, and Marcy kept her for 2 full years, and she's trained as a service dog. So she has the same training as a one-on-one service dog with a person that has a disability. She has that same full 2 years training. She's a golden retriever. And at about a year and a half, year and three quarters, they realized in order to be a service dog one-on-one, having that responsibility for one person, your skills have to be very, very strong. And at times, Sahara tends to get distracted And so they realized that it might not be best for her to go in that direction. So they changed her career and switched her career to a facility dog, which means she still has the same training as a service dog, but she is in an environment where she doesn't have that one-on-one full responsibility for one person's safety.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a school setting, it's absolutely perfect for her. She loves the kids. The kids come in. They sit next to her. I have one young boy who has Asperger's, and every day he comes in and he checks Sahara's teeth, and he wants to make sure that I've brushed her teeth and that her teeth are very nice. But he's very open about it. He pulls up her lips and he checks her ears and he checks her eyes, and she just sits there and she just loves him and then kisses him when he's done.
Oh, yeah, she is specially trained. Yeah. And Dr. Jagatheesan, tell me about the variety of places now, and it's just happened really fairly recently, that dogs are being used for a variety of healing purposes. It's schools now. It's not just service dogs for one person. It's nursing homes. It's, how has it expanded?
Well, for sure, in schools, it's widely happening, but it's also happening in hospitals. Child Life Center, which is a cancer unit for young children, they have visiting dogs as well, and we also have dogs for children with autism, and these very specialized or very well, highly trained and specialized dogs work with families where the child with autism has her or his own assistance dog and lives with the family. So it's sort of to bring relief for the child with autism and mostly also relief for the family in that, I mean, I don't, you know, autism is a very special disability, and it comes with quite a bit of family adjustment as well. And in the transition period, when families have reported to feel a lot of comfort and release and stress when they have this assistant dogs working with them in the home and helping the little child as well. And the dog, of course, goes to the school with the child, and the child is pretty much highly attached to the dog, which sort of helps the teacher as the child is learning in the classroom setting as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another area of where the dogs are helping children.
So what is it about that bond? What is it that has a child go up to the dog and be able to check his teeth and check his ears? And obviously the dog has to allow that to happen. But what is it that makes him feel comfortable in doing that, that makes a child more comfortable about reading if you're reading to a dog? Why? Why is it healing?
Every scenario, I mean, every special condition a child might have, in itself has its own explanation. So to just backtrack a little bit about in other capacities where dogs help children, I've been asked to come and speak to the Courthouse Dogs Conference in October. And these are, again, highly trained dogs that help children of trauma and abuse.
Mm.
Who have been taken away from their families, perhaps their family members abuse them sexually or verbally and emotionally. And now they have to testify against the person who has actually given them, put them through such a sort of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kids now, the courthouse, at least the organization was formed in Seattle itself, the dog comes when the psychologist is talking with the child. And, you know, earlier on we used to use different ways of getting the child to disclose or to talk with ease about those very hard moments, and we used to use art therapy and all sort of creative therapy. Now the dog is in the room, and the child actually has the opportunity to connect with the dog, form a relationship or a friendship with the dog, and be able to, and it has been shown that children, some of the children have actually disclosed a lot of the a tragedy that has happened when the courthouse dog is with them, which for a very long time psychologists have not been able to uncover from the child.
Oh, that's interesting.
So in relation to your question as to why does the child do these kind of things, why does the child connect with the dog? Well, I can only speak to you from the point of children who come from very troubled backgrounds, who are immigrants, refugees, you know, with disabilities. Well, a lot of these kids who come from troubled backgrounds, they have a certain low level of emotional, they have a low emotional status. Negative emotions such as sadness, loneliness, anxiety, stress reactions, lack of trust, fear, all of these negative emotions, because they've either gone through a very frightening experience or they've been abused. And in that abuse, they've experienced a very heightened level of trauma. So when a child is in the midst of happy and friendly animals, calm, well-balanced animals such as a dog, such an experience has been known to reduce the psychophysiological stresses. So the dog, by simply laying his head on the child's hand or the lap, or the child petting the dog's head or caressing or hugging him, such direct contact reduces the negative emotions. So research has shown time and over again that this perhaps could be as a result of the magic hormone known as oxytocin.
Mm-hmm.
So when the levels of oxytocin are increased, there is a connection to the reduction of the stresses and related emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one biological explanation as to why children, you know, they get calmer or less stressed, or, you know, their negative emotions get reduced as a result of being with the dog. Psychologically, honestly, you know, dogs are wonderful listeners. There is nothing you cannot tell a dog.
Your
story or your secret is not going to be safe. And they listen. I mean, adults, when we talk to a child, we have 101 questions. We challenge them. We judge them. But the dogs, you know, they're without interruptions of numerous questions or counter statements to the child. And the child is able to decide what he or she wants to tell you or, you know, does not want to tell you. And the dog's not going to ask you as to whether, hey, what about this or what about that? So there's a level of peace there for the child. And, you know, well-trained dogs, actually, a very calm dog, can increase the child's confidence to speak, because they connect, the dogs connect with the child. And, you know, in this extraordinary moment, especially for a child of abuse, the strength that comes from being in this sort of relationship, this wonderful, loving relationship, perhaps, and I feel, this is what I feel very strongly, that it gives the child that inner push to rise above their troubles and to be able to disclose it, however hard it might be.
Isn't that something? Mary, do you have students who are, come from the classroom and just come down to talk to Sahara?
We do. We do. They come down and they ask to speak to Sahara, and sometimes they don't even want to see their counselor. They'll come in and they'll say, no, I'll just see Sahara today. It's okay. But one of the other things that happens that's amazing is that we have therapists that come on campus to see the kids, and when the kids go into the room with their therapist, Sahara just, and she's learned this on her own, she just walks into the classroom, into the meeting room with the children and the therapist, and the kids always say, oh, well, Sahara's going to stay in here with me while I meet with my counselor. And she just does that on her own. If we have child welfare services come to the school to talk to a child, she'll always go into the room with the child to make sure that the child is okay before she goes on and does something else. She just got that sense that these are her kids. These are her kids, and she's going to take care of them.
And she does just that, doesn't she?
And she does.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls for both our guests. We're talking about using dogs in schools for therapy purposes and the bond that is created between children and therapy dogs. We're going beyond the school because Dr. Jagathesan was talking about courthouse dogs, which is an interesting use of animals as well. I'm sure that many of you who are listening have therapy dogs yourselves, actually, or you're using a dog in a hospital setting, you're using dogs in school settings, you're using dogs in nursing home settings, whatever it may be, or you have a special story about how a dog has been able to help a child who has difficulties. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Mary Skrabuka is the coordinator of family social services at the O'Farrell Charter School in San Diego, and she handles Sahara, the golden retriever on the school's campus, who's used as kind of a therapist to help children learn and deal with the difficulties of their lives. Dr. Brinda Jagathesan is with us as well, associate professor in learning sciences and human development and early childhood and family studies in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Washington. Calls from you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to your many phone calls, starting with Jim in Racine. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi.
How's everybody?
I'm fine. How is
fine.
Everybody?
We're great.
Okay. I have a story to relate in my personal experience with a working dog. I taught special education at a middle school of about 1,000 kids in Racine, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
It had a very integrated student body. And a young lady who was entering my program as a sixth grader, while we were informed about her before the school year started, because she was bringing a working dog with her, a beautiful chocolate lab, tender, very, very nice dog. Well, anyhow, the young lady entered the building and my classroom. The assistant principal came on and told 1,000 middle school age kids who are somewhat rambunctious, and explained to them that for the first time in their school experience, they were going to see a dog in the hall. The dog was not to be whistled at, petted, totally tried to be ignored, and it was beautiful because when you think of 1,000 middle school kids,
right.
and they bought it. It was really fantastic. Well, anyhow, the young lady had severe epilepsy.
Hmm.
And unfortunately, my classroom was kind of in the back of the building and not shunned, but similar by the rest of the kids because of who was in that classroom. Well, it worked out fabulously. The kid had severe epilepsy, and the dog would start whining almost to the second, 45 minutes before the kid had the seizure. Well, as it evolved, the kids in the classroom, 16, 17 of them, who had a variable disabilities and handicaps, because of the dog, was accepted in the cafeteria, in the halls, and the young lady became a good friend of a lot of the other kids who weren't diagnosed and all this type of thing.
Right.
But the dog had one problem. In gym class, there were balls. And the gym teachers would throw the balls, and the dog was tempted to go after the ball.
Right.
But to shorten the story out, the kids in that group became more sociable and were accepted by the other kids in the building. Kids wanted to sit with her and the rest of the kids in the class in the cafeteria, but not saying anything to the dog, not petting the dog. And when the kid finally got through the 3 years at this middle school and went on to high school, the dog was getting old and was put out to pasture, so to speak, and had a beautiful life, and the young lady got another working dog, which I can't talk about because I wasn't there. But anyhow, I had to share that.
Oh, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you were listening. I'm sure that there is, in the best of circumstances, and maybe in many of them, Mary, an element of empathy that is taught with all of this, and heavens knows that's an important thing to have in your life.
It is, and I think that these kids, a lot of them have not been exposed to animals or the proper treatment of animals or, you know, what's the best way to pet a dog or talk to a dog. And so I think we teach these kids so much more when we have the dogs on campus. We have little ones that come in and will pick up her feet and look and they'll go, oh, Miss Mary, she has fingernails. You know, then they'd never seen that before. And so we started this whole thing about how we're going to get some dog-safe nail polish, and that's going to be one of the rewards that the kids have, that they can paint her nails. So I think it teaches empathy, and it teaches a lot of great things on how to be kind and good to animals. So it's great.
Yeah. And to have Dr. Jagathese and all the students in the class respect what the rules were concerning mm-hmm. this dog is really something, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, they, like Mary was just saying, they learn the rules, you know, they kind of sort of understand. And very sort of intuitively, they learn about empathy and compassion. And they also watch us adults, how we interact with our dogs. And and in doing so, we sort of demonstrate the right behavior. You know, okay, this is, he needs a time out to go and enjoy himself, to be a dog, and you know, he can't be with you all the time in the classroom, things of that sort. And then they also realize, as in the case of Tomo and Kush, that Kush didn't care whether Tomo was half Chinese or half Japanese. He loved him regardless.
Right, right.
And that sort of, and that he didn't choose another child from the purebred Japanese. You know, he chose to be with Tomo because he loved Tomo for who he was.
Mm-hmm.
So in a matter of time, they realized that it's not the exterior of the person that matters, but it's a kindness within that attracts, you know, all life, including, you know, humans and animals. So that's a good lesson for children, actually.
Yes, it is. Mike in Spring Green wonders if the dogs are ever traumatized or injured by the children.
Well, one of the...
Go ahead, Mary.
Thank you. One of the things that we make sure that Sahara is always with me. And so I don't ever let her go and be with the children alone. And so they're always within view of me or within reach of me. So that's one thing that we're very, very strict about, and the kids know that. If a child is acting out or if a child, sometimes in the beginning of the school year, we'll have kids that are scared to come to school for the first time, the little ones, or they don't want to, they've been home all summer and they don't want to come to school and they cry a lot. Sahara will just sit right in front of them. And she'll sometimes put her head on their lap while they're crying. But if they're striking out or anything like that, I make sure that she's in a safe place so that mm-hmm. she won't get hurt. Because we don't want that to happen to her, and we don't want that to traumatize the children even more.
Right. Thanks, Jim, for your call, and thanks, Mike, for your comment. Let's go to Cindy in De Pere. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I was just wondering, do dogs ever burn out from dealing with all of the emotional issues of the people that they're helping?
Hmm. Dr. Jagathese?
Yes. So that's an excellent question, actually, because one of the things that I'm the vice president for the International Association of Human-Animal Interaction Organization, and one of the things that we are deeply concerned about is the welfare of dogs. So we have actually, I have an international white paper written out that I have chaired and authored with all my colleagues, which outlines the way animals involved in, and we use the word involved rather than use because we want to make sure that people understand that the dogs are partners, willing partners, and that they're not being used as a tool, you know. And so in that white paper, all the guidelines are clearly outlined and described as to how to be able to take care of dogs or any other animals that we include in our therapy. So that's one of the concerns in terms of burnout, like the guest speaker, the guest on just now had asked about. So one of the ways that we do take care of things, and we advise teachers and all other professionals, is not to exceed the dog working with in a particular capacity for more than 30 to 40 minutes at any given time, and then letting the dog, you know, take a break, for X number of hours and come back. Because it's very important for people to understand, especially professionals and public and all others who are involved, that dogs and all other animals are sentient beings. They are able to feel, perceive, and experience the world subjectively as we do. And so just as how we would handle a child or take care of a child, it's the same kind of behavior and the same kind of rules and regulations that apply for taking care of an animal as well. And that only when the animal is happy, willing, and in good health, and not too tired, in the sense that he is, you know, sort of in good spirit to be able to perform, mm-hmm. is it considered good therapy and ethical therapy? So on either end of the lease, whether it's the child or the animal, both must be willing and in good shape. And then we consider that as a therapy that has been successful or mm-hmm. a therapy that is ethical. So there are guidelines, and you know, I'm happy to send the article over to you, and then if anybody's interested, you're most welcome to distribute it.
Yeah, that's great. If you could send it to us, we'll post it on our Facebook page. That'd be great.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. Mary, what about Sahara? How do you give her breaks?
She does. She has a large bed in my office, and the kids all know that if Sahara goes to her bed and she's lying down, that that's her taking her own time out.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows that when she's tired and the kids maybe come in and want to play with her and just horse around a lot, if she gets tired, she goes right into my office. She'll lay down on her bed, and she knows that that's her space, that that's her space away from the kids, and the kids know to respect that mm-hmm. also.
We all need large beds in our offices.
We
do. We've talked about that here before. It'd be a nice thing to have. Nothing like a little napper every now and then. Thank you, Cindy, so much for your call. Rhonda in Eau Claire. Hi.
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 I have a recently certified therapy dog. She's also a golden retriever. She's quite young. She's just 15 months now, and she got certified right after she turned a year.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And we go to the Chippewa Valley Airport as part of our therapy dog work. I found it really interesting that passengers that are nervous about flying, little children, just like throng around her. And there was an instance where some teenagers were saying goodbye to somebody and they were crying, and they came out and just knelt down and were, you know, hugging my dog. Mm. And we also go to a nursing home, and it just amazes me how, as young as she is, she kind of has intuition where she'll walk right up to somebody in a wheelchair and she'll just lay her head in their lap so they can pet her. And there was a guy that had a stroke and could barely move his arm, and she just seemed to know. She put her head underneath his hand, and he was, like, very stiffly petting her, just smiling from ear to ear.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a really big need for therapy dogs. Here in Eau Claire, they use them in dentist offices, the college, nursing homes. They're looking for dogs for hospice care. And I was just fortunate enough to live in the area where there's a really good training facility here also.
So how much training did you do, Rhonda? How long was the training?
Well, I got her at 8 weeks, and I started taking her. The first thing was puppy classes to socialize her with other dogs. We were in classes basically the whole year, not that we had to. But I just wanted to keep her, you know, the basic obedience and all that. She's been to some agility things. And then there's also a place in Eau Claire called Embark Dog. They offer therapy dog classes.
Oh.
And you can't, through Therapy Dog International, they have to be a year old. I took her at 9 months to that class.
Uh-huh.
And then I took her right before she turned a year, and we repeated the class. We went out to the college, so she learned to ride up and down elevators and go up big stairways. And you have to, like, walk this gauntlet where students are yelling and screaming and throwing pieces of cheese at the dog.
Uh-huh.
So that they learn that they can't pick up food from anybody, you know, anything that drops on the floor.
Right.
But it was just an amazing experience, and I'm just really kind of surprised at how well she's doing for being a golden retriever, because they have so much energy.
Yeah. What's her name?
Bella.
Oh, Bella.
Yep.
Can you send us her picture?
Sure.
We'd love it. Would you put it
on Facebook?
Will you do that? Oh, no, then I can look at Bella when I get off the air.
Okay.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Hey, all of you have therapy dogs. Send pictures to us. We love seeing those pictures. The training, who wants to talk about the training here? Why don't we start with you, Doctor? It is amazing how there seems to be an intuitive process going on, but these dogs have been trained to respond to a variety of situations, some of which may not be very pleasant.
Yes, and so that, again, coming back to the white paper, there's a mention there that only positive training, positively reinforced training, is the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So so we do not believe in negative reinforcements for the dog, whether it's throwing cheese at the dog or kids yelling and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do not advise or promote that kind of training. So where positive reinforcement provides the maximum outcome and benefits and success,
mm-hmm.
where the dog learns to experience something or learns to a particular task or a particular disciplinary requirement in a way that it's not punitive. So that's one thing that we very strongly advise in our white paper.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there are very good organizations that provide training, like Pet Partners, which is actually founded and based in Seattle. They have numerous, I think they spread out all over the U.S. in terms of their branches, and they provide very good trainings for dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the oldest organizations in the country that actually certifies dog to be to perform
right.
the task as a therapy dog.
Yeah, Mary, you want to add to this?
With positive teams here in San Diego, Sahara was in training for a full 2 years. So she lived with
wow.
Marcy. She went everywhere that Marcy went. She's been on planes. She's been on helicopters. She's been to Vegas. She's had some great vacations.
She's been to Vegas.
She has. I've seen pictures. And so she has been very well exposed to a lot of different things, a lot of different situations. There are ways that, part of my training was to recognize her way of telling me that something's bothering her, or her body language, for me to understand her body language so that I can also make sure that I can protect her if she's upset about something or she's scared of something. So that not only did she go through 2 full years of training, but I went through an extensive training in order to transition her from the trainer to me.
I see. And I'm wondering about the bond between the two of you. You must be pretty close as
Very
well.
Close, yeah, very close. Except when I get home, she's much more my husband's dog.
Oh, she's living with you.
She does now. She lives with us. So at the end of 2 years, when she transitioned from the trainer to me, she goes to school with me every day, and she lives with me. I still have to get recertified every year.
Mm-hmm.
The agency still owns her for the first 2 years. When I complete 2 full years of having her with me, they'll assess the situation again. They'll assess her home situation. They'll assess the school situation and her job. And if things are still working well, then they'll actually turn over ownership to me. So it's a long process.
So why is she your husband's dog when you get home?
She just likes him better than me when
home.
He's a daddy's girl.
Isn't that strange how dogs do? We have a dog, but he has a different relationship with every member of the family,
uh-huh.
too, you know, which is always interesting to observe. Marcia sends this email. Neither of my children enjoyed dogs at all, and one of them was downright debilitatingly terrified of them. A dog coming into her school would have resulted in her having to leave the area at best, or a phone call to me or her dad to come get her to remove her completely from school at worst. Whenever I hear about stories like this, I always think about the students who would be negatively affected due to their fear or dislike of animals, which is just as important as the positive effect on other students and should not be discounted. Doctor?
Well, it's an excellent question and so important. Dogs are not for everyone, or in fact, children are known to have allergies,
children are known to have behavioral problems that could impact the dog. Many children are scared about being in the presence of dogs. And also in some cultures, you know, you're not even allowed to touch a dog, as in many of the Islamic communities.
Yes.
You know, there are some regulations, cultural expectations about that. So I think the most important thing is to, which I strongly advise my PhD students who are working in this area, as well as, you know, the teachers in the Seattle area, is to learn about, like, for example, the excellent work that Mary is doing. The teachers need to learn about that, understand the dog, as Mary has, you know, pointed out, because it has to be a complete partnership, the teacher, mm-hmm. the therapist, and the dog. And the more the teacher learns about the dog, then she or he can take care of situations where there's a child who has a fear of a dog or is allergic to a dog. So in one of the humane education programs that I do in Seattle, it became evident that there were a couple of children culturally who could not be in the presence of a dog. So I have a wonderful PhD student working on her dissertation in this humane education topic. And she actually talked to the parents about it. The child is of the Islamic faith, and the parents, it's very important to involve the parents. So, like I said earlier, it's a triadic thing with the teacher, the therapist, and the dog. But another most important person that has to be in that picture are the parents. So she talked with the parents and explained the situation to them and said there's a dog, visiting dog, Ginger, who comes to class once a week. And the parents said, that's fine, as long as she doesn't touch the dog, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then she doesn't have to be isolated from what the rest of the group is doing or
mm-hmm.
the class is doing. So conversations with the parents is vital, and
right.
the teacher is the primary person who should initiate this conversation. And if the parents are completely not on board for whatever reasons, then that must be respected, and appropriate accommodations must be done accordingly.
Yeah, what do you do in your school, Mary?
A lot of the same. We make sure that when the children are registering for school that they're aware that we have a dog on campus. So there's pictures of her in the yearbook. There's pictures of her in the front office so people are aware that she's on campus all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a room on campus that is a non-Sahara room. So she's not allowed to go in this one particular room. So if someone comes to see a child that has an allergy or someone has an allergy, a staff person, they can go in that room, they can meet with the children, they can meet with the parents, and they don't have to worry about the fact that any of Sahara's hair is in there or any of her toys or anything like that. It's a Sahara-free room. Before we go into any of the classrooms, the teachers know that they have to check the medical records of all of the children in their classes to make sure that there's no allergies, and if there are, we'll call the parents first to find out how severe the allergy is and ask the parents' permission how they want us to handle it.
More phone calls in just one moment. 800-486-8655 is our number, and email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we'd love to see pictures of therapy dogs you may have or working with, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We like animals on this show, so every time we ask for this, we get splendid pictures, which we can all enjoy. And there'll be more information about therapy dogs, too, and certification thereof on that page. Back to you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, we go back to phone calls for our guests. Jocelyn is next in Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering if they ever rescue dogs from shelters to become therapy dogs. There's so many animals that need homes, and it's really terrible. And I was wondering if you might do a show on puppy mills. It seems like nobody does any shows about that. I mean, that is just horrific.
Right. Well, all right. Let's talk about shelter dogs being used as therapy dogs. Dr. Jagathesan?
Well, I know that there are several organizations who actually have shelter dogs. You know, they make sure everything, you know, you won't have a shelter dog that's probably in the age that can learn certain skills. Temperament should be fine. They've not been exposed to any trauma in the past that could sort of create any problems for them in the future. I mean, all my dogs are rescue dogs. I don't think two of them really would ever make good therapy dogs, so I know, you know, when to keep that thought aside. But I did have a very close, when I was doing my PhD, I had a colleague of mine, and her chocolate lab was actually taken from the shelter. And his job was to provide balance for her because she had a muscular disorder. And she explained to me that the organization came to the shelter to look for potential therapy dogs in the shelter itself. And they noticed among the others that they selected one chocolate lab that was very strong, stocky, and he loved to pull everything around in this environment. So they got him out, they tested him, and they found that he was a puller. He loved to do things. He loved to pick things. So tapping into what was the likes of the dog, what he loved to do, he was trained to pick up keys, open the refrigerator, sometimes pull things for her across small things. So I'm fully aware that there are organizations that do go into shelters and scout for dogs to make sure that they are, you know, going to be good therapy dogs and that they're trainable.
Mm-hmm.
So it is happening, but how widely it is happening is something that I'm not fully aware of.
Yeah, and I know there are certain breeds, Mary, that tend to be more docile, or retrievers are frequently used, and labs are too, for service dogs and for therapy dogs. There's a reason for that.
Right, but with positive teams, the dogs that they use for service dogs are generally labs and retrievers, but in the therapy dog program that they have at positive teams, they have all different kinds of breeds. I mean, basically, it's got to be a dog that is going to be friendly, is going to... It just has that kind of personality that's going to get along with everybody. But every breed, I've seen Yorkies, and I've seen even a pit bull is in the therapy dog program.
Hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Anne in Random Lake. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. My husband used to work as at a nursing home as a professional, and he used to take our first dog, this was about at least 10 years ago now, but he used to take her in as a therapy dog. She was a black lab. She didn't have any training or certification or anything. He took her in when she was a puppy, and she did that for a couple of years. And just like our previous caller said, she always knew that she had to be very gentle with the residents, and she would just, like that previous caller said, just put her head on their lap or whatever. But she always wanted to connect with people. She just loved being around people, and it's like she just, you know, that was her favorite thing. So it was a really positive experience.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for the call. And there's a need. Can we expand this just a little bit to find out where the need is? There is a need for therapy dogs, Dr. Jagathesan, isn't there?
Yes, there is a need for therapy dogs. For sure, but we also, have to be very mindful of our selection process,
right?
And matching the dog with the child, making sure that they form a good partnership,
mm-hmm.
and they're not in opposition with each other. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mary, do you want to?
I agree. I think there's definitely a need for therapy dogs. One of the programs that I've seen work really well here in San Diego is there's a school that has, it's a residential facility for kids, and they bring the students over to positive teams once a week, and the kids are hooked up with a therapy dog and the trainer, and together they work on social issues, and they use the dog to teach the children how to deal with these issues in a more positive way. And the connection in just the short time that they're there that they get with the dogs, and the enlightenment that comes out of the kids' mouths afterwards is just amazing. Just
yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
I imagine. Wallace is next. Hi, Wallace. We're almost out of time, but go ahead, sir.
But this is a story about aerial training in World War II.
Uh-huh.
And it just wasn't a therapy dog, as it turned out to be later on. We picked up this little puppy in our squadron, which was VT-75, a torpedo squadron in naval aviation.
Yeah.
And this dog was therapy for every one of the guys in the squadron. You know, there was fresh pilots and old aircraft, and there was aerial accidents, and the stress was there.
Yeah.
And this dog was therapy without trading. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I'll never forget this dog as soon as this program came on. We named it Torpedo. When I got discharged, you can bet I had to get a dog.
Oh, I'm glad. And I'm sorry we don't have more time to hear that story, but certainly dogs serve for people in stressful situations, too, and serve in war. Thank you, both of you, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, it was very interesting hour. Our thanks to Mary Skrabuka, who is coordinator of family social services at the O'Farrell Charter School in San Diego, and the dog that she works with. And also thanks to Dr. Brenda Jagathesan, who's at the University of Washington, professor in learning sciences and human development. Thanks to Scotty Myers and KP Whaley for producing this program. Remember, put your therapy dogs on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And thank you very much.